So, good morning. So, as is often the case in offering reflections, I'm wondering where to begin. And to begin here, a sense of sitting here in the Forest Refuge Meditation Hall and feeling the body and the mind and the heart, hearing sounds and connecting with the intention to offer some support, encouragement. And so as we listen, may our citta, our heart, mind hear what is helpful. Giving ourselves this time, this reflective pause, and to sit quietly and listen to the words, listen inwardly, deeply. Present with our body and mind, present with awareness and kindness. With the uncertainty that is a characteristic of life. So I do have some notes and things I want to share around the theme of working with disturbance, disturbed mind and heart, and whether we're sensing it as a kind of coming up from inside us, or maybe we're encountering it in another person whom we encounter. Online or by phone or with them in person at a proper distance. So, just basic intention behind these reflections is to offer some thoughts and reflections and teachings to encourage us all to really allow is my big word, I think, of the moment, but also generally sense of allowing our experience, and particularly that which feels difficult or disturbing in the heart, in the mind, in the body. And the way that our practice can be a huge support to us. So with this, and so really just to be reminded of that, to be reminded, to remember, this is what helps, or this is the opportunity. And that sense of, getting support for that turning. So I was listening to BBC Radio this morning, which I do few times a week, not sure how often, two or three, to just tune in a bit to the news and some of the things happening in my home country. And I just wanted to share a little piece of that, which was the Queen's grandson, William. And I say the Queen, I mean the one in the UK. There are others. And he and his wife have been talking to a lot of NHS workers, the National Health Service, the workers, you know, on the front line with the sick people and the dying people. And his concern, William's concern for mental health and a sense of, yeah, just that the pain that those people are encountering and a wish to support them. And one thing he said that sort of struck me was this very simple, beautiful sort of, I felt this was offered to everybody, to all of us. Like if we feel sad or angry or fearful, he said, talk to someone. Talk to someone about it. So, yeah, just appreciate that sense of acknowledgement of the courage and the challenge that we all face, and just particularly again holding in mind and heart the people who are more vulnerable for all kinds of different reasons. May our practice of steadying our heart with what's difficult be of service to others. So many different varieties and intensities of feeling, you know, difficult emotions or, you know, mind state. So I really want to encourage you to sense, like, let that be very, very inclusive. And if you wish, you might, again, be really present with yourself moment to moment and allow the sense of just however you are, however the heart mind is, it's included, welcome. You know, whether there's happiness or sadness, or again sometimes it feels like a mixture. Yeah, so as always, a sense of this area or aspect of our life and our experience being so potentially troubling and potentially very enriching and transformative and very important principle, again, that we need to be reminded of often. As I was mentioning yesterday, it's actually a quote from Ajahn Sucitto, that the place of dis-ease is the place of satisfaction. Or it potentially can be. And Thich Nhat Hanh, he said, if we are aware of the paradise around us, it is because we have tasted suffering and we have learned how to practice with it and how to transform it into happiness. And what's coming to mind as I contemplate the sense of the a kind of emotional fluidity and sensitivity and richness and depth that's possible for a human being, you know, which is also wise. You know, it's not, it has boundaries, it has wisdom as well. It's the Dalai Lama, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, who perhaps you've seen, just heard stories of how he, you know, he would weep with people visiting him and then laugh with them, and then, you know, just this sense of incredible emotional fluidity, sensitivity. And, you know, that way in which this process, this practice of particularly just today highlighting that sense of what feels difficult, like when we can practice skillfully with that, meet that skillfully, it's such a great potential, you know, for our own happiness and well-being and a capacity to respond to our life and to others. Opening out, releasing energies from all kinds of stuck places and defensiveness and so on. So I can feel as I'm speaking, you know, some of that kind of like feeling both the challenge and the opportunity, which seems to be such a characteristic of the whole situation that we're always in, but in a particular way at present, of the suffering and the disease or dis-ease being the source of, or a condition for the arising of love and compassion and wisdom. You know, very intimately in our own, you know, whole mind, body, heart process. Just as it is. Yeah, just as it is. You know, as wild or ordinary or chaotic or overorganized, or this transformative possibility. And so sensing something about a middle way, kind of middle way approach or view that between maybe the extremes of, on the one hand, sort of almost just indulging and sort of catharting, or you know, getting lost in just, you know, kind of reacting to or believing in the stories and the, so on, involved in the difficult emotions. That's, and again, at times maybe that's sort of where we feel like we can be pulled, or that happens, and then how to kind of catch ourselves, or you know, bring to the situation, whether it's with ourselves or another, and it's kind of okay, let's kind of, where's the, how can we move back sort of somewhere, some middle way, some balance, sort of a way of being with. And so mindfulness, mindful awareness is a key. And on the other side, then the kind of the other extreme of suppression. So where it's like, sometimes maybe you can feel this, a kind of denying, turning away from, pushing it away, you know, distract, just, you know, best to just put your head down and do something. And again, maybe sometimes that is helpful. So, but just, I really sense like sometimes just sitting the body, feeling the body on the ground, on the earth, on the chair, wherever it is, feeling this sense of like whatever is happening when there's that, beginning to feel that contact and that earth that's there, ground, then there's some middle way, which is again very inclusive of the sense of being disturbed, but we're not being taken for a ride by it. We're not being completely taken over by it, and we're not kind of desperately trying to get away from it either. Yeah? So perhaps you can, I don't know, when I say that, I can sense like, oh, it kind of brings, it sort of brings me to mindfulness and brings kind of the sense of, ah, presence, awareness, however you sense that, with what's happening now. What's happening now? Isn't it? That's all. What's happening now? Again, because I think the sense of kind of trying to do it from a distance, or, you know, package up a policy that we can then kind of, it's like much more like just a dynamic kind of, it's like willingness to be with how it is. Yeah, so some middle way between getting lost in and trying to get away from. And I was remembering in this regard a story from, I think, a book of Sharon Salzberg from many, many years ago, and I hope I'm remembering it accurately, but it feels relevant, of a retreat she was on with others, Saida Upandita, and how she had gone to him in an interview and was describing a very extreme sense of upset, a lot of difficult emotion, and so his instruction to her was, I hope I'm remembering this correctly, is be more mindful of it. And, you know, as I remember the story, it's like, has a happy ending. So like, okay, so yeah, being more mindful of it, and then the transformation and shifts that occurred out of that for her, and can do for us too. So the rest of the talk will mostly be about just offering another teaching structure, which maybe can help us. You know, I think we do need handholds, you know, because we're a little kind of life rafts, or whatever image works for you to kind of get hold of and practice to help kind of bring some wise and caring intentionality into this kind of sometimes very, very turbulent sea of the mind, of our emotions and mind states. But just one more image I'd like to offer, which is just somehow been around for me a lot this week, which is, well, there's two images really, and they express something that I think of as compassionate accompaniment. Compassionate accompaniment. It's like we, in relation to our life, and in this case particularly to our, you know, this sense of disturbance, or yeah, how we encounter that in another. We're learning and practicing the art of compassionate accompaniment. So the two images, one was from a story I think I read or heard somewhere from Thich Nhat Hanh, again about taking, like, practicing with anger, being like taking the hand of a little brother, taking the hand of a little brother and walking with that. So maybe as an image for any, I don't know, difficult state or emotion, or taking the hand of a little sibling, and I was being that caring, more, maybe more adult, older. So that sense of the wise part of us, and that, you know, I think for me, maybe for many of you, that sense of the scared little child, or, you know, the angry child, or whatever it is, you know, it's this sense of we can be that for ourselves. We can be that for that part of other people's experience too. And the other image that's been around, which may not, depending on how you feel about horses, I'm very, generally fond of horses, have sense of sort of affinity with them, enjoy being with them. And I was thinking how there's something like putting your hand on the horse, in the neck of the horse or somewhere like that, where you can just make that contact if they're willing. If they're willing. And there's how sensitive a horse is, and how there can be this sense of connection and feeling, like the horse picks up your own sensitivity and mood, and you pick up on the horse's mood, and there can be this wonderful sort of sense of sharing that connection. And it feels particularly poignant at the moment where you feel like we're not so able to touch each other, you know, put a hand on a friend's arm or something like that. And so just, you know, imagining that sort of contact, that connection. Somehow just thinking of that image has like brought a little bit of calm. I just sort of somehow, I don't know if, I'm the horse and the person putting the hand on the horse, if the horse is willing, which is a whole thing in itself as well. Maybe a lot of patience required sometimes. So the teaching structure I'd like to touch on today is this rain, which probably many of you are familiar with. And there's two versions of it around, and I'd like to kind of combine them. So this is an acronym from five practice pointers, to recognize, and to recognize disturbance, to that sense of shifting to, okay, what's here? I'll go through them in a bit more detail. To accept or allow what's here. Opening space for that. To investigate, the I. So we have R, recognize. A, accept. I, investigate. And N is non-identify or nourish or nurture, which is the other N I've heard. So I'm just going to go through each of these and see if that's helpful for... And just supporting probably what you already know, and the skillfulness that's already there, but just sort of remembering, reinforcing. That's something that can be very, very simple and direct and immediate. And these pointers can maybe, again, when it's very sort of stormy or confusing, these 4 points or 5 points can give us some helpful references and reminders. So with the first kind of gesture, again, opening to maybe initially it's really pausing. It's like, okay, wait a minute, stop, pause, let's feel what's here, maybe we can name some aspects of that already and in a kind of immediate way. Sometimes it's not so clear, right? It's like, well, something's going on, something, you know, a little bit of disease or a lot of disease, but not sure what it's about, or, yeah, but recognizing, aha, okay, something happening, and beginning to open that sense of awareness to the body, to the heart, to the mind, to receive. And I think sometimes that can really take a while, depending on how much you've been rushing about, sort of trying to not know and, you know, just kind of be very involved with doing or thinking or something, you know, and then it's like coming and sitting down going, whoa, or just pausing in the midst of a conversation, perhaps with someone, just like, wait a minute. Just making that space to, yeah, to allow how it is, what the felt sense is, to allow it to be there. And so this maybe means slowing down some of our communication more than is, I don't know, habitual or, I mean, yeah, culturally somehow expected or okay. So Joseph Goldstein said, the non-seeing of suffering is what keeps us locked into it. Seeing it, turning towards it, opening to it, allows it to wash through and away. So maybe you can already hear the A of accept or allow in there. These are obviously not completely distinct. They kind of overlap and flow with each other, I think. It's really helpful, at least for me, to have that sense of they can be seen as a distinct gesture or attitude or perception, but also a sense of the very act of attention or the willingness, some willingness to be present, is like already actually brings with it some of that sense of allowing, even a little bit, allows experience to be what it is. And of course, because experience is so dynamic and unstable and changing, that actually that hand on the horse, the real connection coming close to and intimate with, it's actually inevitably going to open up a sense of the fluidity, the insubstantiality of that experience. So much of maybe the sense of stuck is sort of from the holding back, and maybe out of fear, or it's, you know, not very polite, I can't burst into tears at this moment because whatever, whatever different reasons where there's a kind of resistance, and then allowing that too. This is again so much maybe part of the spirit of metta, of goodwill in here. It's all welcome. It's all welcome. It's all welcome. And it's that welcome and that allowing that actually allows things to shift, isn't it? Sort of there's some fear, some idea that I'll be just completely overwhelmed. And again, then, you know, some wisdom to that. Sometimes we need more support, more resources, more embodiment. Yeah, so again, skillfulness may be sometimes actually what really begins to help strengthen the mindfulness and begin to help some more allowing come is walking, you know, walking, walking, Just feeling the body walking and feeling the space and seeing what's around you. We're just, if you can't walk, then looking out of the window. Space. So Pema Chodron wrote, "The healing comes from letting there be room for grief, for relief, for misery, for joy." So I'd like to share at this point a teaching from Ajahn Suchito, which actually he posted this morning, so it's fresh from him at Chithurst Monastery in Surrey in England. And it feels like, yeah, just a slight dogleg here, but it's very relevant to this investigation, this reflection, this expression of how do we support ourselves, how can practice support us in our meeting what's difficult. So he has a 3-point teaching suggestion. So this is what he wrote. Meet everything with 3 criteria. 1, fundamental primary sympathy, moving towards one's experience with willingness. This sympathy or empathy is the artery for communication. 2, a sense of groundedness. Stay with what's felt. 3, spaciousness. Have all the time in the world. Linger. Be timeless. It doesn't matter how long it takes. This is your daily foundation. So, sympathy or empathy, groundedness, spaciousness. Yeah. All helping with the knowing and the accepting and the allowing, and also giving us possibility of investigating. So back to the eye of rain. And which, I sense again, natural process. This deep, that some sense of knowing, present, grounded, spacious with, you know, that's that intention to allow. It opens a space for investigation, or if you think of inquiry or interest. I like the word interest. That somehow for me, what's actually happening right now? What's actually happening right now? And then again, gently feeling or allowing interest to sort of shift, move around, either again systematically or sort of more, you know, organically, or feeling through the body where the, you know, where is the disturbance registering in the body or the energy? How's the energy? Is it kind of tightened up, or is it very sort of moving fast, or and the body tightened up in some places and somehow very absent in others? Like moving through the entire body, all the different areas, so helpful. Just feeling what's there, investigating with curiosity, with a kind interest. And that sense of how how is it really? How is it? And like almost sometimes allowing that to express itself, right? So that the naming, which sometimes we just don't have a clue, you know, we might have to spend a long time hanging out with allowing and investigating and present with, and then, oh, something starts to, oh, right, okay, there's some sadness starts to kind of show up. So I think sometimes what we're really needing to do, again, in the pausing, is allow ourselves to not know. To not know. So that what is actually happening has a sort of room to be itself, to move, to express, and very sometimes surprising. Oh, right. Didn't know what was there. And then just a very simple example of how helpful it is to investigate or to be willing to just probe a little bit, or kind of sense of what am I believing right now about, you know, could be about me or others or the world or anything, but it could just be what am I believing right now. And again, not necessarily pressing for answers, but it can be something very revealing and very helpful. Oh, believing, for example, I shouldn't feel, fill in the blank, right? I shouldn't feel, full stop. Oh, wow, is that, yeah, there's a belief. Wow, okay, so relativizing, exposing, making more conscious that kind of belief. And sometimes I feel like some of what we might consider our, you know, woundedness, or that some of what the keeps the dukkha, the suffering in place, and what doesn't, what sort of prevents then a sort of flow of emotionality to happen more spontaneously and kind of almost easefully in a way, you know, just a, you know, a whoosh of just sadness or anger just arises and passes. That a lot of what prevents that is again some belief we have about ourselves or about emotion or about, you know, how others, how we need to show up for others. I am bad, the belief I am somehow bad and wrong, which I think can be, you know, the sort of shame constellation, which I'm exploring a bit at the moment in my own process around all of what's happening, and a sense of, wow, you know, and I think there's a lot of us that for whom this is sort of there or operative in some ways, some of the time, and really helpful to expose that sense of a sort of core sense of not good enough or bad or wrong, and therefore any way that I'm handling this situation is not good enough. It's like it's all, you know, that's, and that whatever we do, however much we try, so there's something here, if that's operative, to expose it, say, oh, this is not the whole truth about me or the situation, or how could I, and somehow exposing or bringing a belief like that to consciousness and make it consciousness as a self view, a wrong view, an unhelpful view, that can be known and allowed to, be known. And I think that's really the key, is so often the case, is to be known and recognized. So otherwise, these things that are kind of going along between, sort of under the surface. And maybe one of the opportunities, at least for maybe, I don't know, some of us, many of us, being, you know, at home somewhere where it really is like being on retreat in a way where we're kind of encountering not just the more topical responses to what's happening in the world, but we're also feeling and encountering some of the deeper layers of whatever it is for you, you know, those pervasive or repetitive senses of self, other or world. Again, it's this, so this can be a healing time, on that level, perhaps. So I want to share a poem which is called The Healing Time, so by Pesha Gertler. Finally, on my way to yes, I bump into all the places where I said no to my life. All the untended wounds, the red and purple scars, those hieroglyphs of pain carved into my skin, my bones, those coded messages that send me down the wrong street again and again, where I find them, the old wounds, the old misdirections, and lift them one by one close to my heart, and I say, holy, holy. So moving into, maybe it's interesting the sense of then this what can feel very personal, you know, the hurt, the fear, the shame, whatever is around, then all of this can be seen as universal human experience. And maybe that's where, you know, the poet and the teachers and ourselves and others and all of us are together in this human experience, that get and the energy of the mind and the heart that gets so tangled and confused, and that is so conditioned by so much, yeah, of our history, of our culture, of oppression, of family dynamics, educational expectations, work requirements, and all of this kind of sense of then the way that manifests as being this sort of universal predicament, and yet also, you know, entirely intimate, and that feels to me like a very interesting paradox to hold, of the universality and yet this kind of deep respect and love and care for what is very, on one level, very personal or very this being, you know, experiencing that. And how also helpful it can be to bring in a sense of seeing the impermanence and the shiftingness and the uncertainty. If we look, perhaps you know, using different senses of body or feeling tone, you know, pleasure, pain, or perceptions, just sensing the ephemerality and the insubstantiality of all of our experience. Yeah, the insolidity, the insubstantiality of and I think this is so helpful with, say, when you're encountering something that feels quite solid, and like I used to call one of these constellations my inner wardrobe. So it felt like this great big rectangular kind of big wooden thing. It is also empty. It's also insubstantial, and sometimes it happens sort of naturally, and sometimes we can actually incline and actually again intend to, what would it be like to just, as part of this process of meeting the difficult skillfully, as part of that process and that exploration, bringing in at times this sense of opening to seeing and feeling and understanding the fluxing, unfixed and ownerless, the ungovernable, ownerless quality of our life, of our experience. And so just again, with all of this, hopefully there's some room to play, you know, do the things in different order, or just find your own little structure. You know, we're all little structure creating kind of beings, our minds, and finding something that is really appropriate, relevant kind of to your experience and how you understand your practice and how elements of the Dharma that and other teachings that really speak to you. And you can sort of fold in a sense of, again, a structure not to impose on yourself or confine your experience, but as handholds, again, life rafts. You can kind of, kind of get some support until you refind your own buoyancy, to continue that image, until the frozenness and the panic, and then you can relax back in and you know how to float again, you know how to swim. Yeah, so maybe that, and then we tighten up and we need the little raft, little you know what I'm trying to, those little round things somebody can hold on to in the water. So lastly, many other thoughts. Just want to touch on the other N, that the rain, recognize, allow or accept, investigate, non-identify. There's also the N as nourish. How do we nourish? How do we nurture ourselves? You know, how do we nurture the body, the mind, and both in terms of a meeting of how what's happening now, and what does that need? Again, this is such a, for me, such a an expression of metta, goodwill, kindness. To have the respect for our experience, to have the respect for others, and that sense of we don't like to make space for actually discovering, rather than coming in and, you know, and saying, right, you should do this, you should do that. It's like, what's happening? And then that, what does this need? And it's almost like a kind of waiting. Or sometimes I find it helpful to lie on the floor as a support to waiting. It's like, I know if I stay upright, something, I'm more likely to be carried away with, okay, well, let's go and do this or do that. If I like just put my body on the ground, it's like, just wait. And then, usually at some point something, okay. And then either stay there or something comes. So I really, really want to encourage you, and the deep wish that you find the support and encouragement that you need within your practice, and also within friendship, spiritual friendship. And now, however we connect with that, through listening to talks, through talking with people, through a sense of remembering the Sangha in our practice, that refuge. And I'd like to close these reflections by, you know, some of you know I can't get through a month without singing something for you. So here it comes. And it's a chant, a chant that I made up, which some of you will know. It's a compassion chant. It's based on a teaching, a compassion teaching in a Tanisara's book, Time to Stand Up. And it's a chant that refers to and invites us to connect with a sense of compassion as embodied by Kuan Yin, this figure of, or yeah, embodiment of compassion, which is again, you know, very, probably very meaningful and known by some of you and not others. So maybe you could imagine or remember someone you've encountered or heard about who has embodied and expressed a lot of compassion. You feel that, you know that somehow, you perceive that in them. Or it is a sense of resting in that quality, of resting in that quality of heart, the great heart, the great heart that is compassion. So I'll repeat it a few times. If you know it, you can join in. I'd like, makes me smile thinking that you might join in, but if not, then just feel free to just listen. And then we'll go into a little bit of silence. So, yeah, wish you well. Take care. Resting, resting deeply, I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world. Resting, resting deeply, I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world. Resting, resting deeply, I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world. Resting, resting deeply, I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world. Resting, resting deeply, I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world.